dreams
and feed the Normaton.
Let's challenge his shattered view of the world.
Here's a little edge for the never believer. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Truth, everything else is illusion.
Live on the Revere Radio Network. I believe we just had a technical difficulty there. It is August 13th, Monday, 2007. 13th. Anyway, so this is Total Information Radio, live on the Revere Radio Network. Homepage, home website of this broadcast, total411.info. You want to go to revereradio.net also and make a donation, listener-supported radio, etc. So if you go to the homepage of this website, you will see the promo for tonight's guest. We might have an extra guest on after. I hope that would be a good deal. Tonight we have attorney Jerry Liepart, and we are going to discuss, the conflict of interest inside the NIST, 9/11 report. And if you heard the live coverage of the 9/11 Science Conference, a week ago this past weekend, and you would have heard Jerry Liepart give the update. He is acting as the attorney for Dr. Judy Wood and two others who have submitted requests for correction to the National Institute of Standards and Technology regarding the so-called collapse of the World Trade Center report. And what you want to do is... I'm getting messages here. We got all the documents there for this guest that's coming up. And it's the request for correction, the supplement request for correction. And we're going to talk about the kind of weasel words they use, especially regarding the supplement to the original request for correction regarding the conflict of interest between Applied Research Associates and... directed energy weapons, and why that might have affected how it wrote the report, which they were hired to do, and also what else it means, what were they really doing there, besides writing this report, I think is an interesting question. And, I mean, these are the kind of people you want to investigate. Now, some people I've heard out there on the radio on that we simulcast during the day, they keep saying that space beams from Pluto destroyed the Twin Towers on 9/11, but I have no evidence that the people at Applied Research Associates are from Pluto, and I think there's some irresponsible people trying to hook up the 9/11 truth movement with aliens, and I don't think that's very useful. So we're gonna call our guest. He's not online quite yet, but you should take a few minutes to review those documents, and I guess we're going to play some music while you do that. I got all kinds of music here. What should I play for you? How about this? We'll play this for you. You page through those PDFs over at total411.info, and we will be back momentarily live on Revere Radio Network, and later you'll be able to call in at 1-8. And we are back live Monday night, 10:15, Revere Radio Network. That was Soundgarden with Come Together. I live next door to one of those guys during my Hoboken phase. I used to hear them practice a little. We have our guest on the line with us. It's Jerry Liepart from up in Connecticut. How's everything going?
Yeah, fine, James. Things up here in Connecticut are fine for the dog days of August. Had the perceived meteor showers out and about. Couldn't really see them. The sky was too hazy.
Yeah, well, so many of us live in this East Coast megalopolis. It seems to go from Boston down to D.C. It's hard to see the stars at night.
Yep.
I wanted to talk to you about this response that's been issued by NIST. People can go to total411.info or total911.info, and I've posted the link right to the Department of Commerce website. And I guess Dr. Judy Wood and yourself and everyone just got this response about a week ago. Is that right?
Yes, it, I guess probably closer to 2 weeks now, to be exact, James, it has been issued, and we are within the time period allowed for taking an appeal. When you get a decision in any sort of legal, be it administrative, as these proceedings are, or a court decision, the first thing you do, of course, is take a look and see what the overall outcome is, whether, it's favorable, unfavorable, or somewhere in between. And then after that, you read it carefully and in order to determine exactly what it's saying. Now, if you look at just the conclusion of the NIST response to Dr. Judy Wood's request for correction, you will see that it says that they are denying her request, meaning, as they specifically say, that they are not going to retract their prior report on what caused the destruction of World Trade Center Twin Towers, WTC 1 and 2, and that instead they're just going to, let that report stand. But then in reading the exact content of the three-page response, you get an entirely different impression. And in point of fact, the NIST response reveals significant inconsistencies as between the reasons why they say they are denying the request for correction on one hand, and the rationale in support of maintaining the status quo on the other. So basically, I think any of us who are involved in the search for truth with respect to the events of 9/11 can actually take heart in what NIST has done. It really does provide a mechanism for continuing the formal proceedings to try to use legal and administrative process as one part in the overall effort to get the truth of 9/11 to come to the fore and to be registered in the overall public consciousness.
Sure, and it really, when you kind of read through it, as you said, it's almost like They're saying that it's not our job to explain the destruction of the World Trade Center. We were just told to explain how it might have started collapsing. They're not even really saying that it did collapse, or they're saying that they have to take that as a given, almost.
That's right.
You're reading it? Yeah.
They're just reiterating that they neither explained the event, nor did, at one point, you think they're saying, we didn't even try to explain the event, so what do you expect from us?
Yeah.
So it is extraordinary. At another level, we know, James, that other than valiant efforts to get this story out and its various components through the alternative media sources available to us, such as, for example, what we're doing right now, we have very little access to media. And we are up against the broadcast capacity of mainstream media that not only saturate the airwaves and the print media with whatever it is they want you to know, but they're doing it with an intensive application of psychological operations. They are working overtime to further implant and impress and imprint the official governmental conspiracy theory.
They're still trying to ignore that there's even a World Trade Center 7 that fell, even still today, to the casual viewer of television.
That's right. Has just fallen into the status of news blackout. They will not say anything about it. It's such that we don't expect coverage of this development with NIST. We don't expect mainstream media coverage with any of the other legal proceedings that we have going on. And you know what, James? There's a good chance that even if we were at some point to succeed in some measurable way, I'm pretty convinced that no matter what, they are not going to, they meaning mainstream media, mm-hmm. are just simply not going to call attention to it, unless they absolutely have to. And about the only way that I can see that they will be forced to do this, if we in alternative media succeed in establishing ourselves as a full alternative and as a full competitor with and for mainstream media. I think we actually can do that. I think more and more people are realizing that they're really being misinformed, manipulated, and used as guinea pigs by mainstream media, who are using that wonderful resource of broadcast media, the ability to communicate via television, radio, etc., for nothing more than a way to get you to buy this, that, or the other product.
And that's why we hope more and more people tune in to Revere Radio, which is listener-supported, and throw some money in the pot. So looking at this response they gave, this PDF, I wanted to focus some on, I guess it's on page 2, it's the first full paragraph.
And I'll try
to just read it here for the audience, if I can make it all the way through. Let's see. In your supplement of March 29, you also assert that Applied Research Associates, one of the contractors involved in the investigation, has a, quote, significant, clear, and palpable conflict of interest that adversely affects the quality and the integrity of the work done by ARA for NIST, unquote. And then they go on to say, prior to award, each NIST WTC investigation contractor underwent a rigorous organizational conflict of interest analysis. As a result of the analysis, ARA was determined not to have an organizational conflict of interest. See, that's a passive voice, isn't it? They don't say who determined that. I'll just finish here. In addition, each contract contained a provision requiring the contractor to notify NIST immediately should any organizational conflict of interest arise during the course of the contract, and no such conflicts of interest were reported. Then they go on. You further claim that ARA is a significant manufacturer of directed energy weapons, indoor components thereof. Since there is no factual evidence to support this claim, NIST has no basis for accepting your proposed corrections to NCSTAR 1, which, of course, is the their big report. So what did you think of that? That's something we talked about on this show before. What was your immediate reaction to it, and what do you think a couple weeks later?
Well, okay, my immediate reaction to it was that in looking at the language, you have to ask yourself, okay, well, what questions are they inviting me to ask? You also look at this language to see what, if any, admissions are they making? And thirdly, you look at this language and ask, what further questions can I ask, and or what information can I ask them to provide, mm-hmm. to verify the claims that they are making in the letter. In other words, if you're used to, you know, legal language, you're basically asking, well, how can I use the process of discovery, meaning the use of written questions, or what we call interrogatories, or using written requests that they produce certain documents, you know, requests mm-hmm. for production of documents, in order to actually verify the claims that they are making there. For example, they say they went through some sort of process of determining whether conflicts of interest existed or not. Okay, well, what did you do? What did you see? What information did you consider? Give me copies of it.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. And ask who did it. It was probably like, you know, Anderson Consulting or some one of these other criminal firms that's been indicted in the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was, you know, that was my, you know, initial response. Mm-hmm. And that initial response, James, you know, each aspect of the three things that I mentioned all go to the issue of what your next steps ahead might be, you know, now that you've gotten this written response. Keep in mind that, you know, any sort of written response then serves as a baseline. And, you know, from this point forward, anything that NIST says about this can be reviewed for purposes of whether it is consistent or inconsistent with what they have said here. In other words, it provides a basis for, you know, making sure that what has been said here is true and correct.
Well, this request for correction process has been around for a few years now, 6 or 7 years. Has anyone else, you know, what has anyone else appealed or re-responded or re-requested to a reply like this?
As we're on tonight, James, I really don't know the answer, you know, to that question. And one reason why I don't know the answer to that question, of course, is that the request for correction arising under the Data Quality Act apply to all of the agencies of the federal government. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our focus is, you know, is highly specific. You know, we're just focused on one aspect of one agency, that is one, one written document, namely NCSTAR 1, that comes within the scope of the Data Quality Act that is issued by one branch of one agency of, you know, the federal government. And what you know, so, James...
Yeah, this is part of the Department of Commerce, and I guess every
correct.
Department has its own administrative procedures. So
that's
it's really
correct.
Hard to say for a new law. Yeah. Good point.
That's correct. So what we do know is that the three individuals that I represent, namely Ed Haas, and then Judy Wood, and then Morgan Reynolds, filed respectively the first ever request for correction involving the report on what caused the destruction of the World Trade Center. So that's a fairly new development.
Yeah.
The very first one was filed just barely 6 months ago at the beginning of March. And then two of the three are still pending in the sense that NIST has not yet issued even an initial response to them. Judy Wood's request for correction was the first one that received a mandated written response.
Sure. Okay. So I thought we might go further into this Applied Research Associates issue. There was the supplement to the original request for correction, which basically, in case I guess there could be one or two people who don't know listening, Dr. Wood's original request for correction basically, you know, it's 40 or 50 pages, and it said that there is such an energy deficit given the dustification of the buildings that there's some kind of energy source here, and directed energy weapons obviously would be a candidate, and there's other specific evidence pointing towards that. And so this conflict of interest is about this firm, Applied Research Associates, which, if you look around on the web, they're a founding member of the Directed Energy Professionals Society. Just so right off the bat, that's a huge red flag. And what else do we know about them, and what do you make of this response?
Well, the response is very interesting because it does not deny the claim that ARA is a significant manufacturer or developer of directed energy weapons. It doesn't deny that claim. You know, and there's actually another approach that might have been taken with respect to Dr. Wood's assertion there, and it's noteworthy, James, for what this response from this does not say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to assume that many of your listeners tonight are probably people who have some familiarity with the overall 9/11 truth movement.
Sure.
And that they will know that within the 9/11 truth movement, Dr. Judy Wood has both those who are keenly interested in and deeply supportive of her research, and amazed at the high quality of it, and at her what you might call intuitive capacity combined with scientific expertise that has resulted in the formulation of the theory that directed energy weapons of some sort or another were a causal factor in the destruction of the World Trade Center. In other words, she has supporters for her theory, but she also has critics who are deeply and vehemently opposed to her idea and to her theory.
I'm sure a lot of listeners do know all that, and I guess just for those who don't know, I mean, there are counterintelligence agents in their patsies who don't want people to talk about how the buildings disintegrated, and that's kind of the short story.
Yeah, that's kind of the short story. And then among the critics, there are those who say, this theory is so ridiculous that, that it has to be the work of, tell you this much. U.S. governmental agencies do get a lot of frivolous claims presented to them.
Mm-hmm.
This is not shocking. This is not news. People submit frivolous claims to governmental agencies, and they submit frivolous claims to courts. But what happens when a frivolous claim is presented to a governmental agency or to the court? I'll tell you what happens. The agency or the court says so.
Yeah.
And they don't mince words. And they, it's not personal. If you submit a frivolous claim to a federal governmental agency or to a court, you will be told in no uncertain terms that your claim is frivolous and it is hereby dismissed. Well, guess what, James?
They had no such response in there.
Now, this is a matter of public record, isn't it?
Indeed.
You pulled it up. You presented it to your listeners. You have let people know where they can access this information, namely
411.info, and also
the
Department of Commerce.
The missed response to Dr. Judy Wood is a reasoned response as far as it goes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But as a matter of fact, the limitation on the response is that it doesn't go quite far enough. It doesn't really answer the questions that Dr. Judy Wood raises. However, the strength of the response, in my opinion, James, is the extent to which that response acknowledges that they understand exactly what Dr. Wood is claiming. And not only do they understand exactly what Dr. Wood is claiming, they understand exactly who Dr. Wood says may have a responsibility for what actually happened that in turn creates a conflict of interest. They understand, and they said they understood, what Dr. Wood was claiming.
But did not
specifically deny the validity of it. They basically said, and you just read it on the air,
mm-hmm.
that with respect to ARA, no, you've got to provide us with some more information.
Well,
you know what? We will take them up on that.
That's great. That's great. And I put some links up on the page. Maybe we can go through some of that information about what ARA was up to. Do you have these links in front of you, or?
Well, let's see. What's our time frame here, James?
What's your time frame?
Well, I think I would like to. I think we're better off if we are concise.
Mm-hmm.
That if we give the listeners something specific that they can look at, but without trying to do the an entire analysis on the on the radio, and that for a couple of reasons. One, I'm not quite sure if it would be an effective way to communicate. Yeah, the information. And then secondly, I must say that I from a legal point of view, I'm quite comfortable in talking about the missed response because it is, after all, a matter of public record.
Sure, sure. No, I understand. You have to
be
close to the vest. Maybe after we let you go, I'll talk some more freely. Anyway, it's just very interesting because,
I think I'd want to respond initially, though.
Sure.
And that is that let's give out the website or web page address from the ARA Applied Research Associates website. And the one I want to give out is www.ara.com/capabilities defense.htm. And if you go to that page, it's noteworthy for having two columns of small thumbnail, actually they're a little bit larger than thumbnail size photographs.
Oh, okay.
And if you can go there, James, you'll see that the first photograph on the
left hand is
a missile, and then to the right of that there are soldiers dressed up in biological, chemical, hazardous gear.
And again, it's ARA.com/capability/defense.htm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Then right beneath that is a photograph of a building being turned to dust.
It's a big chunk of the building is just missing.
Yeah. And what
reminds me of Oklahoma City.
Well, it reminds me of the World Trade Center site. Look at the front part shows something that, yes, does look like Oklahoma City, but look in the back. There's a big column of a big plume of dust or debris.
Oh, down the street.
Down the street.
Wow. I didn't catch that the first time.
But yeah, look at that. That to me is astonishing.
That's really interesting.
James, that photograph, you know, that's too much. You see, and that's, I'm speechless based on what that photograph reveals about RA's capabilities.
Yeah, we've talked about on the show before something called revelation of the method, and people might want to look up that phrase. That's kind of a side issue. It's very revealing, and you know what are they up to? I mean, maybe I'll just talk, and maybe you don't want to get in this, but you know they have other pages on there about prototypes, and you know where their facilities are. And I know if you look at their corporate documents, or even on their website, Albuquerque, New Mexico, right next to Los Alamos and all the testing grounds there.
Yeah, they're right next to Los Alamos. They're right next to the Directed Energy Professional Society, which is headquartered in Albuquerque. And they're right next to Kirtland Air Force Base, which is the hub of the Directed Energy Weapons System. They have what is called the Directed Energy Directorate, headquartered at Kirtland Air Force Base.
And you know where their main headquarters is in Albuquerque, but you know where their second biggest operation is? It's in Aberdeen, Maryland, right next to the Aberdeen Proving Grounds, where the U.S. Army tests all their equipment.
That's right.
Their weapons.
ARA is basically, they are a weapons manufacturer. They are at the epicenter of the military-industrial complex.
And like it says in their name, they do research, and you see, looking, just clicking around their ARA.com website, prototyping is very big. In fact, their page is manufacturing/prototyping, so it sounds like they're doing a lot of the origination of these kinds of weapons, and then, you know, maybe then they hand it off to someone like Raytheon. At least that's what I'm thinking, and then it makes me wonder, because this meshes with other hints that we see on 9/11 that, you know, what to a large degree, many of the weapons that directed energy weapons included that could have been used were in fact prototypes, and then ARA was sent in afterwards to do the research on what the prototypes were, and then they can go back and have their meetings and decide whether or not to go into mass production and manufacturing. So that's my rant. You don't have to comment on that if you don't want to.
But I won't comment on it, but I hope your listeners are listening carefully.
Okay. That's where I am. So how much longer do you and Dr. Wood have Or does Dr. Wood have, Judy Wood have to do this to respond?
Well, the response is due within 30 days of the receipt of the letter. As a practical matter, what I usually advise clients is to count the 30 days from the date of the letter. That way, you know, you can't ever get into a controversy about whether you filed it on time or not. So, as you can see from the website, that the letter has a stamped date on it of July 27th. Now, I can tell you that it was not received until several days after that, but for purposes of the appeal, chances are it will be filed right about at the 28th to 29th day, dated from July 27th.
That should be very interesting. Maybe we'll have an update on the
when we file, we will be able to, you know, make an announcement that it has been filed. Because, you know, and you're allowed to make announcements like that. And then it'll be up to NIST to post it to their website, thus making it a public document.
Great, great. Is there anything else we didn't cover? Do you want to?
I think we have. I think we have covered what we can do with clarity in this program, James. I can tell you that you know, if subsequent developments occur, then, you know, I, from a legal point of view, I can talk about developments, you know, after they occur, but, you know, I can't use a forum like this as a way to present a case.
Sure.
And use it to discuss developments
that have already been filed.
As they happen. So I would like to think that you know, we'll be able to do that again or as and when new developments occur. You know, certainly would be very pleased to be invited back to do that. And I think that we've certainly given your listeners an update, and hopefully have provided some information with some degree of clarity, letting them know that Dr. Judy Wood's theory is taken seriously in official governmental circles, and that theory is going to be further developed.
That's great. Thanks. Thanks for coming on.
Good to speak with you, James. Thank you.
Good night. Bye. And that was Attorney Jerry Liepart, who is working with several plaintiffs filing a request for correction with NIST, part of the U.S. Department of Commerce there. So we might have another guest. We're definitely going to have open lines, I think, regardless. So you can call in 1-877-REVERE-0. And, you know, you'll have plenty of time to talk. We can go past 11. So there you go. You want to go to revereradio.net and make a donation. And why don't we play some music and we'll be back.
News, politics, rumors, rants, and debates. It's the worldwide home of free speech radio. RevereRadioNetwork.com. Total free speech, even when it's ugly.
And we are back on the Revere Radio Network, worldwide home of free speech. Tried to get a surprise guest for you, but I'd my show's on too late at night, so maybe I should go earlier in the night. Because that would have been a good show. Maybe I'll get him on another Revere show tomorrow night. I won't say who it was right now, but important topic. Let's see, it is 10:55. We are live at 877-REVERE-0. If you have anything to say, if you don't have anything to say, we're going to wind this up in just a few minutes. And, you know, I did play that song for a reason, and I'm going to find that story for you. That song, of course, was only a northern song. It was from the soundtrack to the Yellow Submarine movie, but it was originally recorded for Sgt. Pepper, but it was just too hot for that album, too explicit about the whole, you know, there's a fucking dead Beatle situation, and they did not put it on that album. It was by George Harrison, and it was more than a year, in fact, it was almost closer to 2 years than a year later, well, from recording to release, definitely closer to 2 years before they finally got that song out there. Anyway, and since it's about the whole thing, about, you know, Paul Zett, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and if you heard the show on before me, the Anubis Show, which is a good program, he's also on late night, Saturday night, and I popped in there to talk about this issue in relation to the Phil Spector trial, and how that song Dig It mentions other people who died and were replaced, and one of them was Bob Dylan. And again, it's 1-877-REVERE-0 if you got something to say, because he opens that riff that Phil Spector put on the Let It Be album imitating Bob Dylan, and then he goes on to name three other celebrities who were replaced. So there's an article in USA Today, you might have heard this already, but it was on the bottom beneath the fold front page of the Life or whatever entertainment purple section D of your McPaper, USA Today. Film splits Dylan's personality among six actors. And how many actors does a movie need before it recreates Bob Dylan? The answer isn't blowing in the wind. It's six. That's the unusual approach filmmakers took for I'm Not There. And that's the name of the movie. The movie, opening November 21 in limited release, uses an abstract concept to chronicle the life of Dylan, his own freewheeling philosophy, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, it's supposedly a Dylan biopic, but it's not even really a biopic. It's just some kind of impressionistic thing. It's got six different people playing the character of Bob Dylan. And again, it's called I'm Not There, which apparently they say was a basement recording from after the original Dylan died. And so they got six actors, including the actress, Cate Blanchett, who plays Dylan's son. And it's interesting because if you remember the original Dylan, who died around the same time Paul McCartney died in late 66, fall or late summer, was very frail and small and feminine. And, you know, if you look at some of the pictures from that 1966 till when he became more of a regular presence around 69, it's possible that one of the people appearing as Bob Dylan actually was a woman, because it was hard to, I mean, he was a really short, skinny dude, you know, with, anyway. So there you have that, and again, it's, let's read a little bit more of this article before we wrap it up, but director and co-writer Todd Haynes says he wanted to make something more than the traditional biopic, by presenting a series of vignettes that differ in tone and style as much as the actors differ from one another. Quote, it's not a literal retelling of Dylan's life. We're accentuating the radical changes in point of view and style and genre and identity. And Dylan is represented as a young boy by a black kid, which is, you know, they're kind of throwing it for a curve there, but why not? Heath Ledger plays a Dylan-esque character, an actor playing a Dylan-esque character, whatever that means. Some British dude plays him mixed up with a 1800s poet, Rimbaud. Batman Begins dude plays Dylan a couple times. Richard Gere plays Dylan. And then Cate Blanchett plays Dylan. And so there you go. Is Bob Dylan a real human being, or is he just another corporate entity? You know, if you listen to the Quasimodo show with he talks about you're being a real person and being a corporate person, and you know, that's it's because the real Bob Dylan or the real James Paul McCartney died doesn't mean the corporation Paul McCartney has to die. In fact, if you look at the albums after the original Paul McCartney died, if you look at the artwork, the original LP sleeves and everything, the only time it says Beatles, in all caps. It makes a point of it. Variant, you know, so D, which is capitalized regularly, on the White Album, it says The, and then Beatles. So it was like the name of the album, The, and Beatles, in all caps. And then, same thing on the back of Let It Be. It just says, all of a sudden, the word Beatles is in all caps. And, anyway, so it's being the corporation, being the real person, being dead, being not dead. Even though it's 11, the phones are open, but if no one's going to call in, probably just going to play one more song for you. What can I play? As you might know, I've been kind of running this network part-time with some other people, and I played... See, I don't have that big a music collection on my hard drive right now. Most of it, it's a pretty new computer, and most of my old stuff's on a DVD somewhere, but I'll play something for you, and then we will rock out tonight. So, let's play... Oh, boy. How about I play a little Manor Astro Man for a couple minutes, and we'll call it a night. So, check out Manor Astro Man. We had a special call-in guest tonight. It's a 9/11 researcher into the video fakery and everything. It's Jim.
Hey, Total. How are you?
Hey, what's going on? So, it's one of the reasons it's good to have a show is sometimes I get distracted during the week and I can't follow all the research and everything I'm interested in. And you've been following what's going on with TV fakery and I guess the ghost plane, which I mentioned last week on my show. I played the clip of this guy, Michael Herzicani, who allegedly took the ghost plane footage, what I call the Kitty Pryde raghead plane, where this plane just flies through a building. And he wouldn't say anything. He would neither confirm nor deny that he took it, or I guess that was even a real video. And so I guess there's been more research going on into who this guy Herzicani really is. And I'm behind, and I brought the audience up to speed on what I know. So what can you tell us, Jim?
Well, apparently he's a diamond dealer in Los Angeles. I haven't gone by to see his store, but... he runs a company called Image Diamonds, and it's also interesting that that last name, that family name, is associated with a group called the MKO, which is also known as the People's Mujahideen, and they have a big office in London, and they're also one of the and they're one of the favorite groups of the neocons. There's I think it's called the National Resistance Council of Iran or something like that.
Oh,
but,
wow.
Iran has been formally complaining to...
Is that like the Iraqi National Congress?
Yeah, exactly. It's like Ahmed Jalabi, but for Iran. So this is the exile group that the neocons are hoping will foment a revolution inside Iran and take over Iran on behalf of the, the neocons.
Oh, man.
So
certain is it? Is that a very common family name? Is it pretty?
You know,
pretty reliable.
I don't know. I've been reading the research on the internet, and the only two Herzicanis that I've been able to find are this Manoushir Herzicani in London, and then the Michael Herzicani in Los Angeles. But it's just interesting that a group that is supposedly a world-famous terrorist organization, supposedly got billions of dollars from Saddam Hussein and helped guard their chemical and biological weapons, that group has,
Is this one of the groups? Does the State Department call them a terrorist group? Because I know there are a bunch of groups.
The State Department calls them a terrorist group,
okay.
But the Bush administration has been quietly... supporting them, right?
It's been going on for a long time. The State Department calls a group a terrorist group, and then the Defense Department is giving them all this money. And it's like, what's going on? And probably a lot of it is connected to that Office of Special Plans, because that sounds like a very special plan to me. I don't know about you.
It certainly does, and the diamond connection is interesting, too. There's an unsolved murder mystery in New York City with a prominent member of the Bukharian Jewish community in New York, got gunned down on 47th Street, which is Jewelers Row in New York City. That's where all the diamond stores are. But diamonds are... This happened in, I want to say, 2005. I'm not looking at a computer screen right now. But his name was Edward Nektalov. I think N-E-K-T-A-L-O-V. He was shot twice in the back and once in the head. And he had been cooperating with the FBI on an operation called Meltdown, which was a group of FBI agents said they wanted to launder money, and they approached him to make jewelry that they could smuggle millions of dollars back into Colombia, basically make gold belt buckles with diamonds and things that wouldn't attract too much attention, that would just look sort of like normal, you know, everyday items, but would actually be worth...
This ties back to the Hezirkani diamond family?
Well, so there's an interesting possible connection between... it's not very well fleshed out at this point on the internet, but there's a lot of covert action that's been going on in Angola. There was a civil war there, and this group, the MKO, people have talked about them taking up shelter in Israel. There's some Israeli ties and Pentagon ties to this group, and so. Hezirkani is a diamond dealer in Los Angeles, and diamonds are a sort of notoriously cliquish business. It's not the sort of thing where you just walk up on the street and say, I think I'll become a diamond dealer. You know, you typically need connections to that. And it's a little bit loose at this point, but it appears that some of the covert action that's been going on in Angola and that's led to the government taking control of the diamond supply there could tie back into this. So I'll just leave it at that. I don't have all the answers on that one.
Interesting. So the Iranian National Congress, basically, which is also a terrorist group, and this guy sounds like he could be connected. Do we know anything more about this business that he has? What is it? Did you say it's called Imperial Diamonds?
I think it's called Image. Diamonds. I don't know a lot about it at all. I just know that he's been keeping sort of a low profile in Los Angeles, and as far as I can tell, hasn't given any interviews as to how he came into possession of this. Mysterious CNN video.
Sure.
And as people have been showing on the internet, it doesn't look like... I mean, NIST says it was taken from the ground in Battery Park, but it doesn't seem like the sort of thing that can be taken from there. Because if you go to the water's edge, you're behind some trees, and if you go into the clearing of the park, then the buildings are all...
Well, maybe that can be a project for... I know a bunch of people going to New York on 9/11, and I guess the weather circumstances would be very similar, so as far as leaves on the trees and that sort of thing, so it might be a good chance for people to check that out for themselves. Maybe there could be a mass gathering there.
People should head down to Battery Park and check that out, and also some of the other famous 9/11 videos. I don't know what to think. There's some people who are posting that the shadows are all wrong for that time of day than some of the videos, and I don't really have any idea on that, but anybody who's in New York around 9/11 with a camera should go and try to scout out some of those locations and just see.
Yeah. Maybe ask people around there if they know Michael Hezirkani, if he used to come to the park at this time of day very often. That could be a good research / activism project. So anything else? I mean, he won't say anything. Has there been any other, you know, anything we missed about this guy?
I know people have called CNN, and I think one of the same guys who tried to call and interview Hezirkani called CNN a few times.
We love him. Is that audio available? Maybe we could play that.
I'm not sure if it's out yet. I think it's been a, oh, we'll get back to you, and it's one of these things where they sort of oohed and aahed at a question, and I know they've been called on several occasions, and as far as I know, they haven't provided any answer. It's been sort of
they're just the media. They're not supposed to provide any answers.
Yeah, this is not like they have a public responsibility to keep people informed or anything.
So. No, not at all. They just have to give money to AOL, Time Warner, Colin Powell, and Ted Turner, and all those. I don't even think Ted Turner gets a cut anymore. All right. Well, thanks for that update. Anything else you want to update us on?
No, I just look forward to hearing the rest of the show, and it's always good to talk to you.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Have a good night.
Care. You too. Care. Bye.
Okay, so that was great. Very informative. Michael Herzikani, the ghost plane guy who we heard last week, is maintaining his radio silence, and it appears he's connected to this neocon cell of people like Michael Ledeen and all those guys who give all the money to the opposition terrorist forces in Iran. So, maybe he's a good guy. I know the diamond business is full of ethical people, and they don't maintain a global cartel by murdering hundreds of thousands of people or anything like that to keep the price of their shiny rocks up. That would be wrong. And we're going to call it tonight here on Total Information Radio, live on the Revere Radio Network, the worldwide home of free speech. You want to go to www.total411.info to explore in depth all the issues raised on tonight's program. And you want to go to revereradio.net and check out all the other great programming. You probably want to make a donation there. And, that's it. So, peace from you out tonight, I guess, with more Man or Astro Man. So, enjoy that. Later.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revere Radio Network. Remember, Revere Radio Network is listener-sponsored radio. No, it's not all about the Benjamins, but believe me, that shit helps.